Welcome to Intelligent Medicine, America's foremost program on health, medicine, and nutrition, featuring the latest on both conventional and alternative therapies. Now, here's Dr. Ronald Hoffman.
Welcome to Intelligent Medicine. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. 888-302-3684 is our number should you desire to pose a question to us this hour. In addition, if you want to email us your questions, radioprogram@AOL.com will get to us and we'll answer your question during one of our weekday podcasts. We post them at drhoffman.com. All right, lots of stuff to discuss this week. We're going to talk about the health benefits of pistachios. Also, we're going to take a look at a study that questions the benefits of frequent colonoscopies, you know, that procedure that you just can't seem to get around to. Well, new studies suggest that maybe, just maybe, we're doing it too much. And we'll also talk about puzzles and games for enhancing brain function. It's a controversial notion. Does it really help to stave off Alzheimer's and dementia? All right, before we get to those stories, of course, the big story this week that we have to cover is the death of Joan Rivers. And Joan and I actually go way back because we used to be neighbors on the radio. She used to have her show from 7 to 9 on weekdays at flagship station WOR out of New York City, where I still broadcast from. And I was on at 9 o'clock. And so I spent a lot of time talking to her, seeing her. She's just an extraordinarily nice person, not that acerbic personality that she's sometimes projected from the stage. She was the real deal, just a really sincerely nice person, but not a phony person, not a, you know, goody two-shoes. And, of course, we were all shocked to hear of her terrible medical mishap that led her to be placed into a medically induced coma. And I knew that that wasn't good. I knew at the time, you know, we talked about it last week on the program because this has been an ongoing train wreck. And at the time, I said, you know, the prognosis is very grave here because people who have heart attacks, especially not heart attacks, but cardiac arrests, even worse, the heart stops beating and the patient is resuscitated, they generally have a very, very poor prognosis. If they even survive, they often survive with severe mental impairments, motor difficulties. And so during the week, all kinds of confusing information came out that she was improving or that she was not improving, that she was unresponsive, and back and forth it went. And then around the beginning of the week, she was transferred out of the intensive care unit to what we in medicine refer to as a step-down unit, less intensive care, just, you know, putting a patient into bed with medical monitoring equipment, but not the round-the-clock care and intensive intervention that happens in the intensive care unit. And some people interpreted that as a good sign. They said, you know, that's good. She's out of the intensive care unit. She's out of critical care, and hence she's on her way to recovery. But the way I read it was that that also could have been a very bad sign, that all hope for her to survive was out of the question, and that she wasn't necessarily abandoning her to her fate, but foregoing extraordinary medical measures to keep her alive. And indeed, she passed later in the week. And so there are just so many questions that revolve around Joan. We know so much about her life, and there's been retrospective after retrospective on TV, and we've seen so much about her during her vibrant life, but we know so little about her death and the circumstances surrounding it. For example, what procedure was she having? What was she actually undergoing? Was she just going in for a routine check of her vocal cords because she sounded like she was getting a progressively more raspy voice, and she certainly did a lot of screeching and shrying and hollering, and maybe you know, that coupled with the fact that she was 81 made her voice sound rather raspy, and so maybe she just had a procedure where they took a look-see at her vocal cords to see if there was damage. Or alternatively, was she having a procedure done on her vocal cords? And I talked to some doctors about this because I've been trying to track this story down, and I have colleagues. And they said that if you were to get, say, laser surgery on a polyp or radiofrequency surgery or scalpel surgery on a polyp, that always, always the patient is under general anesthesia. The patient's intubated. The patient is being breathed for. So when I heard that Joan had a respiratory arrest, I thought that's odd. Because only if she's just getting a look-see with a tube called a laryngoscope going down the throat, would they not have her on general anesthesia. For laryngoscopy, they may mildly sedate you, put you under to suppress your gag reflex, but they don't actually intubate you. But for any kind of surgery on the vocal cords, they would actually have a breathing tube in place. So how can you stop breathing when they're breathing for you? Actually, the safest place to be from the standpoint of a respiratory arrest, from stopping breathing, is under general anesthesia with a tube down your throat, because even if you want to stop breathing, you're being breathed for. So what was the procedure that she was undergoing? Was it absolutely necessary, or was it simply elective? Some people have suggested that Joan was having what is termed now a voice lift, which is a procedure that rejuvenates the vocal cords. She certainly had plenty of plastic and cosmetic surgery, and perhaps she was having some kind of surgery on her vocal cords to make her sound younger. So was this simply elective, an effort to sound better? That would sound a little bit, perhaps in retrospect, frivolous in light of the risks. Ultimately, who could have foreseen that? What was her underlying health? Did she have some kind of underlying health problem that made her more vulnerable to cardiac arrest or whatever? What actually happened in there? Well, nobody really knows. And now they're interviewing intensively the staff who were present, the doctor or doctors and medical staff who were present during her procedure. In fact, the New York State Health Department is conducting an intensive investigation of Yorktown Endoscopy, which is the place where she had her procedure. And what did happen? Did she have a stroke? Did she have a heart attack? Did she have a sudden loss of blood pressure due to perhaps excessive use of anesthesia? Was there a cardiac arrhythmia that resulted in her heart stopping? Was an MD anesthesiologist present? Usually, when serious procedures are performed, a medical doctor is there to monitor the patient and to administer anesthesia and to make sure that if something goes wrong, a very experienced medical professional is there. How long before chest compressions were undertaken? You know, the CPR or cardioversion, shocking the heart. Was there a critical delay? You know, the expression time lost is brain lost. Well, that certainly applies to this situation, because maybe there was irretrievable brain damage that resulted in a dismal prognosis for Joan after the cardiac arrest. So far, it's unclear. An autopsy has been performed, but according to the New York City Medical Examiner, no conclusion has been reached. And maybe, you know, additional tests are underway. Some of the pathological specimens that were taken from Joan's body will be evaluated more extensively, perhaps. But will we ever know what happened? What have the medical personnel there said to investigators? Were mistakes made? Could this have been avoided? Well, the other day, as it happened, I had a patient come to see me who happens to be, he's a medical doctor. He's an anesthesiologist, in fact. And I sat him down and I said, look, we got plenty of time because the patient after you canceled, and I'm not going to take away from your time. I just got to ask you, in your opinion, what in the heck happened to Joan? You do these kinds of procedures dozens of times each week. This guy is a very, very experienced anesthesiologist in his 60s. And I said to him, you know, how many procedures have you done where you put patients under anesthesia? 10,000? And he laughed. He said, no way. I said, what, 20,000? He said, nah. He said, more like over 50,000 of these procedures. And never, never in his career has something like this happened to him or to a patient under his care. Yes, sometimes patients have gone into distress, but never has a completely healthy patient come in and with a minor procedure gone into cardiac arrest. So this is an exceedingly rare event. But he doesn't even have an idea of what could have happened. It's not clear to him what could have gone wrong. In fact, there's a rigorous system that they have to rate patients' health before they put them under anesthesia. Anesthesia is potentially dangerous, but they rate patients according to something called the ASA Physical Status Classification System. Status 1 is a normal, healthy patient, while status 5 is a patient who's not expected to survive unless there's some emergency operation, and there's every step in between patients who have underlying medical problems. And patients are classified. They need to get a workup before they undergo anesthesia. So this is a mystery that hopefully we'll learn from, because it's a teachable moment, and we need to learn lessons from the terrible medical tragedy that has unfortunately taken from us an extraordinary individual, Joan Rivers. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.
At Nordic Naturals, we know that a commitment to deliver the world's safest, most effective omega oils requires an exceptional process. That's why we manage every step of production, from boat to bottle. That includes sustainably sourcing wild-caught fish from well-managed fisheries. It means using state-of-the-art equipment and technology at our manufacturing plant in Arctic Norway. Nordic Naturals bottles and encapsulates our omega-3s at our own facility and carefully ships products from our eco-friendly headquarters in California. The result? Nordic Naturals products have received more than 40 awards for taste, innovation, and product excellence. You can trust the quality of Nordic Naturals products and know you're getting all the health benefits omega-3 fish oils offer. Nordic Naturals' high-quality, great-tasting omega-3s make staying healthy easier for you and your family. When choosing an omega-3 fish oil product, choose the number one fish oil in the U.S. Choose Nordic Naturals. Available at natural product retailers or online at nordicnaturals.com.
DrHoffman.com, your portal for cutting-edge information on health and nutrition.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. Dr. Ronald Hoffman here. And right now, if you're sitting in front of a computer or if you have a mobile device handy, I want you to go to drhoffman.com and check out the homepage and then scroll down. And there you will see an announcement for something called the Evolution of Medicine Summit. You can click on that box and you can sign up for what I think is the premier event of 2014 in terms of rapidly gaining knowledge about advances across the board in complementary and alternative medicine. It's going to be a great seminar. I'll be part of it. I'll be kicking off this summit, the Evolution of Medicine Summit, on Monday, September 8th, as host James Maskell interviews me on the subject of the evolution of gastroenterology. We'll talk practical remedies for GI problems, the importance of diet, new findings about the microbiome, which is the organisms that inhabit our GI tract and their implications for overall health. And you'll also hear from some other incredible presenters. There's a great lineup. Deepak Chopra, Mark Hyman, many of the people that we've interviewed here on Intelligent Medicine Podcast, Dr. Jeffrey Bland and Dr. Leo Galland, and an all-star lineup, Robin Berzin. These are some of the top people in complementary alternative medicine, and you can hear them free via this webinar. It's online and free from September 8th through 15, 2014. So go to drhoffman.com for information. The Evolution of Medicine Summit. Click on the box, and you can sign up and be part of this great event. All right. We often talk about ways to fend off dementia. And one of the controversial propositions is that you can do brain exercises. You know, just like you exercise your body and you keep yourself in shape, well, you keep your brain in shape by using challenging mental tasks like crossword puzzles and computer games. However, despite some very ambitious claims, and they actually have, this is a whole industry, these games that promise to enhance your cognitive performance and memory, there's no real evidence that they work. What does work, and this has been documented, is exercise. Physical exercise, paradoxically, doesn't just keep the body in good shape. It keeps the brain sharp, and it fends off dementia and memory loss. That's for sure. That's been documented. But some doubts have been cast on whether these brain games actually help you. On my Facebook page recently, I posted a picture of one of my relatives, Florence, who is 95. She's a twin. So they're two 95-year-old gals, and they're both super sharp mentally. You should hear them sitting down talking to each other, recalling stuff that happened in the 1930s. And she is an inveterate player of these memory games. Her grandkids gave her an iPad, taught her how to use it, and she sits in a chair and she bangs out these memory games and games that test her reflexes and reaction time. And she's competitive with herself. She's trying to always improve her score. But there's not a lot of evidence that works until this new study. Puzzle boosts verbal skills, cuts dementia risk. This is from the International Journal of Geriatric Psychiatry. The study looked at cognitively normal men and women, 57 to 90. They were in Ireland. They completed one crossword puzzle daily for a period of time. And the second group just wrote down stuff kind of on a random basis. And what they found was that in a relatively short time, subjects in the crossword group were better able to recall words at the end of the study. It actually improved their verbal memory and recall and tuned up their brains. Now, admittedly, it's a small study, limited methodology, but it does suggest that there really may be something to performing complex medical tasks. Another reason, too, why people should remain occupied in challenging occupations instead of retiring at 60 and chilling and sitting around the pool and watching TV, which is something that certainly has erosive effects most of the time on memory, mood, and brain power. So we're reviving the controversy. The controversy seems to cut both ways in terms of studies, but new evidence that performing brain-teasing tasks can actually help you fend off cognitive decline. All right, 888-302-3684. When we return, we'll take a look at a study that challenges current recommendations to get frequent colonoscopies. We'll be right back.
Whether you are getting ready for a once-in-a-lifetime vacation, flying to a business meeting, or just visiting friends, don't risk ruining your trip by neglecting to protect your digestive health. Pack award-winning Dr. O'Hara's Probiotics, one of the best lines of defense against traveler's tummy. Dr. O'Hara's convenient blister packs are portable and never need to be refrigerated, perfect for traveling. Backed by over 25 years of research, Dr. O'Hara's Probiotics use 12 strains of live, beneficial bacteria, combined in a centuries-old Japanese fermentation process. The result is a superior supplement that enhances immunity and digestion, which helps reduce the risk of getting sick while traveling. Stay healthy while traveling and remember to pack your probiotics. Dr. O'Hara's Probiotics.
Dr. O'Hara's Probiotics are available at Vitamin Shoppe, Whole Foods, Sprouts, and other fine health food stores nationwide. Discover the Dr. O'Hara difference.
For more intelligent medicine, download our free podcast at drhoffman.com.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. Dr. Oliver Hoffman with you. And a big shout out and our best wishes to Grimaldi, who's our Hoffman Center supplement manager. She's the person that you talk to if you call the Hoffman Center to order supplements. And she is about to, tomorrow, perform in a Spartan race, which is an incredible accomplishment because when she first came to work for us around 7-8 years ago, she's very petite, but petite would be an understatement to describe the state she was in. She was really quite underweight, and I would even go so far as to use the word emaciated, because on her petite frame, there was very little muscle, and she complained of fatigue. She was 74 pounds, and we made her sort of a science fair project. We decided to do some tests on her, improve her nutrition. She went along with our dietary suggestions, began taking supplements, and tomorrow she's about to perform in her second Spartan race. This one's longer than the first. I interviewed her this week on our Intelligent Medicine podcast, which you can hear at drhoffman.com. You can download it. You can subscribe to the podcast via iTunes. And as part of the podcast, I talked about the health benefits of whey protein. We have a very, very delicious and easily assimilable bioavailable whey protein. And there's some real benefits for people who are underweight, as well as for people, paradoxically, who are overweight, as support for people who are dieting can be very helpful. It provides a lot of satiety for people who are trying to lose weight, but for people underweight are trying to build up. And this is actually particularly a problem in older individuals. They develop sarcopenia, and the whey powder can offset that. It also helps to lower blood pressure. It is a source of beneficial glutathione for the body. And this is part of Grimaldi's sports nutrition regimen. And she now weighs in at a sturdy 96 pounds, a 22-pound weight gain. It's actually hard for underweight people to put on weight. And she's going to climb obstacles and jump over fire pits and crawl under barbed wire and do all manner of crazy things tomorrow. So we wish her well. Check out the podcast at drhoffman.com. Okay. A big menace is headed our way, and you may not have heard too much about it. You've heard of West Nile disease. Everybody's aware of Lyme disease. But there's another menace headed in our direction. It's chikungunya virus. I first heard about this all around 3-4 years ago when I saw a patient who was of South Asian background who was visiting her relatives in India, and she came back with a horrible, horrible medical condition. Her joints became swollen. She developed excruciating pain, fevers, debilitating weakness, and she was diagnosed as having something called the chikungunya virus. I'd never heard of it until then. It's quite common in Asia, but it was unknown in the Western Hemisphere. Well, the bad news is that chikungunya has made its way into the Caribbean and has even made it to the U.S. mainland. The first few cases have been reported in the southeast United States. This, along with dengue fever, they're actually similar conditions, although the joint pain is more pronounced in chikungunya, are threatening to ravage certain parts of America. It's unclear whether they're going to spread across the country because there may be a latitude limitation to the spread of the mosquitoes whose bite transmits this virus. But, you know, there's a lot of speculation in this week's New England Journal of Medicine about how far this is going to go. But it's a big medical concern because there's no effective treatment. The treatment is basically to wait it out. They're testing vaccines and antiviral medications. But this is a very much more clear and present danger than Ebola, which so far has been confined to the African continent. This has spread to our very doorstep. And coincidentally, I might make mention of the fact that we have a new sponsor. Cedarside is a company that makes cedar oil-based insect repellents for pets as well as for humans. And, you know, you rely on me to tell you about the latest, most effective products. You're going to hear about this more and more because we're going to run commercials about Cedarside. Cedarside can kill and eradicate bed bugs, which is a big problem here in New York. People are going on subways and they're getting bitten by bed bugs. It's scary. There was a bus recently in New York where the bus emptied out. People ran out in a panic because they found bed bugs crawling around in the bus. Mosquitoes, and you know, this may seem like, oh, it's the end of the year, no problem, mosquitoes are going away. Well, I get bitten way into late fall, early spring. And so we need natural repellents. DEET, potentially harmful, can cause neurological damage, very dangerous for children, pregnant women. And while it's effective against ticks and mosquitoes, it's pretty toxic stuff. So we need a full range of natural alternatives against bed bugs, mosquitoes, fleas, ticks, mites. And for those of you parts of the country where there are scorpions, also effective at repelling scorpions. Some people say sometimes they live in the Southwest, they reach to put on their sneakers and they find a scorpion in their sneaker. That's not something that usually happens here in New York City. But this company is Cedarside.com. Check out the website. Don't forget to type in Hoffman to get free shipping. Or you can call 800-842-1464 and mention my name, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, for free shipping. 800-842-1464. It's a great natural bug repellent. And we're happy to have them as a sponsor, especially in view of the fact that some pretty dangerous diseases out there. West Nile is now the least of it. Chikungunya and dengue fever are exceedingly painful, debilitating conditions, and they're transmitted by ordinary mosquitoes. So you want to protect yourself from those hazards. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.
If you're like me, balancing my blood sugar is important to me for my health and wellness, especially as I get older. I pay attention to what I eat and try to exercise daily, but even that might not be enough. So each day I take Kyolic Blood Sugar Balance in conjunction with a healthy diet, regular exercise, and plenty of rest. Kyolic Blood Sugar Balance is my trusted ally for healthy weight management, overall cardiovascular health, and immune function. Kyolic Blood Sugar Balance is a synergistic combination of odorless kyolic aged garlic extract and herbs and nutrients shown to help maintain blood sugar levels. And it's made by our friends at Kyolic, the number one best-selling odorless garlic supplement on the market for over 40 years. So join the Kyolic team. I did.
Kyolic Blood Sugar Balance is available at Vitamin Shoppe, Whole Foods, Sprouts, GNC, and fine health food stores everywhere.
Why do I use the Spry Dental Defense System? Because it tastes great.
Because fillings are ugly.
There are a lot of reasons to use the Spry Dental Defense System. A complete line of oral care products such as toothpaste, mouthwash, gum, mints, and more, made with 100% xylitol. But the best reason is because it works. And because it's all natural, Spry is 100% safe for kids. There are even Spry products developed especially for your children and toddlers.
Because my dental hygienist told me to.
Because it's all natural.
So ask for Spry by name whenever you buy toothpaste, mouthwash, gum, mints, or anything else for your mouth. And make sure you're receiving all the benefits of 100% xylitol products.
Because I want a great smile, duh. Why do I use Spry? Because it works?
The Spry Dental Defense System. Great taste, less fillings. For information or to purchase Spry, visit SpryDental.com.
Available at Whole Foods, Vitamin Shoppe, and other fine natural products retailers.
A regular dose of Intelligent Medicine injected directly into your inbox. Subscribe to Dr. Hoffman's free newsletter. Just go to drhoffman.com.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. We got a caller, Bruce, from Long Beach, New York. Welcome.
Yeah, welcome. Thank you for taking my call, Dr. Hoffman. I'm a 79-year-old gentleman that has a total cholesterol of 102. It was in 2008 and 2009, it was 142. And
right.
in 2012 In 2014, it was 104, and yesterday it was 102. And I don't take any, statin medication.
Clearly. What's your diet like? What are you eating?
Now I eat meat, fish,
yep.
Cheese.
Eggs.
I eat fat. Eggs, yes.
Yeah. Okay, so do you have any underlying medical conditions?
Yes, myelodysplastic syndrome and prostate.
Bingo. Bingo. Okay, so here's the deal with low cholesterol. Low cholesterol in a relatively healthy person is not necessarily bad. I mean, if you look at the cholesterol of the average person in a, shall we say, underdeveloped country who's on a, a hunter-gatherer who is in the Amazon or people who live in the Himalayan mountains and raise their lead a pastoral life, doing subsistence agriculture. These people often have very low cholesterols and they're healthy. Studies show that low cholesterol is associated with risk of dying or risk of serious medical conditions like cancer. And you actually have two types of malignancy going on. And so the association between your low cholesterol and your medical problems is merely an association. It's just a sign that you've got some medical issues. And so that's why studies sometimes show that low cholesterol is associated with illness or mortality. But trying to raise the cholesterol isn't necessarily going to fix the problems. So I think this is an example. Yeah. So I think, you could take, 25 eggs a day, and eat, fatty sirloin steak all day long, and your cholesterol might go up a couple of points. But I think the problem is your body's just not generating cholesterol. That's actually why we say that, when people have high cholesterol, it may actually be a sign of robust health, that their liver is efficiently generating cholesterol. And, cholesterol, of course, being the building block for many other hormones in the body. It's a precursor to testosterone and some of the other sex steroids. So in this case, just an association. It's not necessarily a causation. I think it points out the folly of people trying to either artificially raise or lower cholesterol in order to enhance their health. I think it's, in your case, just a sign of trouble. All right.
Okay, I just want to ask you one more thing.
Yep.
I also have a hemoglobin A1C. It was done. It was 4.4, yet the fasting blood sugar was 93.
Wow.
Is that?
Yeah, that's unusual. That's unusual. That's an unusually low hemoglobin A1C, and it suggests that you may have, instead of high blood sugar, you may actually have a low blood sugar, and it may be due to your certain metabolic problems that you may be extremely thin, you don't have enough glycogen on your depleted muscle mass to sustain adequate blood sugar. In fact, you have low blood sugar. It's sort of the opposite of diabetes. I'm not sure I would make of this that it's a problem. It's just the opposite of a bad result. High hemoglobin A1Cs over 5.6 or 5.7 indicate prediabetes or insulin resistance. You have the opposite, low blood sugar. All right? All right, this is a study about pistachios. Promise to talk about pistachios. Pistachios, and I eat a ton of pistachios. It's one of my desserts. Instead of reaching for a sweet or pie, or cake, cookies, at the end of a meal, I'm hungry. I want a little something to round off my meal. I'll grab a handful of pistachios. The nice thing about pistachios is they take a little work to eat. You have to open them up, so it slows down your eating. In this new Spanish study, people with prediabetes who ate about 2 ounces of pistachios daily, that's not much, showed significant drops in blood sugar and insulin levels and improvements in insulin and glucose handling. Also, some signs of inflammation dropped dramatically. So, suggestion, if you are suffering from metabolic syndrome, insulin resistance, syndrome X, consider pistachios. Pistachios clearly have a lot of health benefits, as do many other nuts. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.
Wellness is just a click away. Go to drhoffman.com.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. You know, endoscopy is said to be a routine procedure, but as the Joan Rivers case illustrates, she went in for, quote, routine endoscopy, in this case a laryngoscopy, and didn't end well for Joan. And, in fact, the facility where she had it done, Yorktown Endoscopy, is now under investigation. It's a place where people go as outpatients to get routine upper endoscopies, looking down into the stomach, or routine colonoscopies. And they say, well, it's no big deal because only very, very rarely are there complications, perforations of the intestine, or sometimes bleeding, or sometimes, but very rarely, death. So here's a new study that questions what's called surveillance colonoscopy. Typically, if you have people who get a baseline colonoscopy, they'll find a polyp. Some polyps are more dangerous than others, but benign polyps are thought to be a reason why people should go back and get more colonoscopies. Doctors often say, well, you had a polyp, so we're going to recheck maybe every year, maybe every couple of years, 2-3 years. This study looked at what's called surveillance colonoscopy in Norway, and what they found was that after taking out a polyp, there was absolutely no difference after 8 years in the risk of colon cancer or dying, and therefore this questions this hallowed practice of once you've had a polyp, you got to go in for frequent what are called surveillance colonoscopies. Same thing with something called Barrett's esophagus. That's thought to be a precancerous condition of the esophagus. And esophageal cancer, very serious problem. I actually talk about that in a podcast. My clinical focus of the week last week was Barrett's esophagus and how to prevent and reverse it. It turns out 5% of Americans have Barrett's esophagus. It's a lot of Americans getting lots of endoscopies. And a new article in the New England Journal of Medicine questions the need for routine interval endoscopies, looking down into the esophagus and stomach in people with Barrett's esophagus. They say that the risk of cancer is exceedingly small. It's 0.1%, very low. And that looking down to see if it goes away is not a cost-effective strategy, and ultimately doesn't save lives. Although they admit that patients and doctors often feel that it gives them a sense of security to just look down, make sure that nothing is going south or heading in the wrong direction when it comes to these abnormal cells. But clearly, you know, our healthcare system, underfinanced, headed over the cliff, and yet we keep doing these procedures which are not scientifically justified. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. When we return, lots more content, plus your phone calls. Get ready to dial 888-302-3684 for Intelligent Medicine.